Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Eating Disorder. Today is our Mardi Gras special, blackouts and beignets. That's about all we remember. When you wake up the next day and you're covered in powdered sugar, you have no recollection, but you know it was pretty sweet.
Bite marks on your ass cheeks and whatnot.
Please help me welcome my co-host, the Reverend Spiro.
What's up?
Adam Velez.
How y'all doing?
And tonight's guest, we have drummer extraordinaire, New Orleans spectacle, Mr. Ronnie Magri. Welcome. And also writer, bartender, restaurateur.
Scientist of sorts, mixology.
Sinjin Fritzel of Fort Defiance.
Where you at, Paul?
Yeah.
Welcome, welcome. He brought some bourbon milk punch for us today.
Delicious.
Unfortunately, Spiro and I have used up all our drink tickets, all those years in New Orleans. They don't allow me to drink anymore.
It's good. It's high in vitamin D.
And Austin and Phoenix and whatever. I own a men's to a bunch of cities. I really do.
I actually heard from Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me that Mardi Gras is French for cancel Christmas. So how's everybody doing? You all ready to rock and roll? You ready to get your Fat Tuesday on?
Yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, let's roll.
That's it.
Well, I mean, I want to throw this out there. I mean, we got three adopted sons of New Orleans here. We got Paul, we got Ronnie, both from Brooklyn, right? And Sinjin is from New Jersey. And you know, me and Adam here, we're Yankees,
native New Yorkers.
Yeah,
native
I have a pretty specific cultural version of what I look at New Orleans. Though I've been there a bunch of times. But I look at it from the standpoint of, like, you know, it's great to eat and it's great to drink, and it's also, like, in the media, like, crazy. I mean, you got True Blood is done over in Bonton, and Dan Rice did the... Yeah, exactly. You got Dan Rice doing the Vampire Diaries, and the American Horror Story was done this year.
It called to me since I was a kid. I remember when I first started... I started cooking in restaurants when I was 13, but I remember when I was about 14 or 15 years old walking into the kitchen and it was just full of smoke. Mm. And the chef that I was working for at the time, his eyes were watering and he just looked like he was in the most excruciating pain. And I looked on the counter and Paul Prudhomme's book was sitting there. And I said to him, I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm blackening." And from that moment, it totally grabbed me. I mean, I ate it and I had never tasted anything like that before. And it was amazing. And this was like right before the whole world started blackening. And then we blackened everything.
Blackened, yeah.
You guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I came to see you in New Orleans the first time, right, first of all, I fell off a pickup truck as he picked me up from the airport.
I remember that.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
And, you were wearing like an S&M mask.
Yeah, yeah. And it was actually Halloween.
It was fucked up. You wore it on the plane the whole way.
It was actually the train, which took 30 hours.
Right? You took the train.
But Paul tells me, he goes, "You can eat out of a dumpster here, and it's better than fucking Brooklyn. It's fucking amazing."
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, I like Brooklyn food.
Well, we're pretty poor then, though, you know?
We're pretty poor. I remember that weekend you were there, we took a bunch of acid, and I made, like, some fucking cheese sauce that I cooked for, like, 7 hours.
Yeah, the 7-hour cheese sauce.
We're chiseling at it with a
I remember that you were dressed, you had on, like, one of those bondage masks, yep. And I went dressed as a priest, and my girlfriend went dressed as a little boy.
And you actually had her on a leash.
Yeah, I had her on a leash, yeah. That was great.
The body of Christ.
How about, you know, Ronnie, I remember when you moved down there, I was already there. I set up camp, and then you came down shortly after.
Yeah.
When Ronnie and I were in the cab coming here, I was asking him if, you know, he had any specific memories about, you know, Mardi Gras that we had together. And both of us just sat in silence for about 30 seconds. Like, I don't remember. You know, we spent 15 years down there.
Yeah.
Definitely affect your memory.
That means it was good, though.
Yeah. Right? Oh, man.
How about you, Sinjin?
I was trying to think about some Mardi Gras memories myself. I remember one. The night you really go nuts is Lundi Gras, which is tomorrow, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Crash worship show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and Frenchman Street in the 90s when I was there was like insane. And I remember I biked home, fell off my bike, and I got back on my bike. I was like, I'm just going
to. That's pretty good. You could do two wheels.
I'm going to. Yeah. Well, yeah, but I fell down. I woke up Mardi Gras morning. And I think I left half of my face on like Franklin Street and Royal.
It wasn't makeup on his pillow. It was face on the concrete. It was,
your face
had all
stuck
gravel.
There.
It was like blacktop in my face. And I was like, boy, I got to get this looked at. I cleaned it all off and started to bleed again. I was like, man, I got to go to the hospital. So I decided to drive myself over to Charity Hospital. And like between the Indians and the parades and everything, it must have taken an hour and a half. I'm like holding my face with a paper towel, holding half of my face on, driving there, honking my horn. And then I got there to the ER. There was nobody there. Nobody there. It was completely empty. I walked right in. I said, where is everybody? They said, everyone's out having a good time.
What happened to your face?
What are you
paint?
Doing here?
Your face looks fucked up. What kind of paint job did you do?
They took pity on you, handed you a couple of Valium, and sent you in your way.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, zombies are one of our Yankee, you know, things about fucking New Orleans too.
Yeah, everybody would have thought it was just a costume.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, you know,
I was trying to think of some food when we first started talking about doing this Mardi Gras episode, and I said, well, you know, What is some specific Mardi Gras food?
I want to talk about king cake because Greeks also do. We got to think of all Apocryas. It's our version of carnival, and it happens exactly at the same fucking time.
Right. Well, it's a Catholic thing.
Well, yeah, and we have a thing called Vasilopita, right, which happens all the way near Christmas, actually, where this whole rigmarole actually kind of starts on Twelfth Night when
That's what king cake came from, the 12th night.
Right, and Vasilopita, and to do a little, my big fat Greek wedding, Vasilopita comes from the Greek
Spiro.
Vasilis, which means king, and pita, which means cake. So there you go.
Vasilopita.
But I mean, I want to know.
I had my first bite of king cake just the other day, and I got the baby.
We have a coin.
We're coming to your house then,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I got to buy the next one.
Yeah.
I had a friend give me key cake, but it wasn't a coin or a baby. It was a hit of acid, which wasn't a...
That's good.
Not a pleasant... I didn't do the dishes, I'll tell you that much.
That's a win-win right there. But the only thing I could think of besides the king cake was Popeyes.
Yeah.
You know, you eat Popeyes at like 7 in the morning on Mardi Gras Day, and then, you know, it gives you a good foundation for the rest of the day to
Well, if you have a house on the route, you know, then everyone is going to be on your front lawn, right? So you got to do something. So you either do red beans or you do gumbo.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. So, and hopefully you do the gumbo the week before so it sits around your fridge. It gets really good. And
yeah,
it's always
better when it sits.
Right.
Gumbo, well, damn if I know.
All right. Well, I'm hoping that maybe we can throw in a little bit of music to this show. We're gonna play a little bit of Ronnie's, you know, New Orleans jazz band.
Where are the girls? You didn't bring any girls to
no
dance
girls today.
Where's Von Tees?
No. Oh, right.
You had the best seat in the house.
Yeah. Next time.
All right. So this is Ronnie Magri with the New Orleans jazz band.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You folks at home didn't get to see Adam taking off all his clothes and all that.
And my hairy Greek nipples for the beads. I mean,
was,
you know.
It was Areolaville, population 6.
It was all about it.
Spiro was the mayor.
So, Ronnie, I know for me going down there as a chef and learning and just eating and drinking and tasting all the food and everything, how was it for you as a musician to go down to New Orleans?
Well, that was the reason why I moved down there, for the music. And I mean, it was like going to school. You know, I would go down there. A lot of the old time guys were still alive that were playing with Fats Domino and Little Richard.
Ernie,
didn't you play with Little Richard?
I played with Little Richard. Yeah,
with
LA. Yep. So a lot of those guys were still alive. I got to go watch them and play and study with them. So it was like my going to college for music, you know.
You remember we used to hang out with Fats Domino's
drummer. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He would drive us around in his big Cadillac, and he was a pimp.
And that was Fats.
wait, real quick. Can you describe your relationship with Mr. Drummer Man?
That was Fats' Cadillac.
That was Fats' Caddy, yeah.
Wow, really?
And he used to drive us around and some shady parts of New Orleans.
Yeah, man, that was the best.
And he'd be going around checking on his girls.
Yeah. Lunch quarter was part of roll, shady.
He'd
I
roll
mean.
Up and pick up some cash.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He'd be like, I got to get Fats' car back. Yeah, so we loved that. Yeah, that was always great.
I mean,
that's
you
awesome.
Know, that's why I went there.
That was always a trip. And then, you know, we got the music and the food, but the thing that held us together the whole time was the booze.
The debauchery.
Yeah. St. John, I know we're going to get into a little more after the break, but if you want to tell us a little bit, I see you got something that's some kind of milk concoction.
Mother's
milk.
This is a bourbon milk punch. This is a drink I actually remember having for the first time at somebody's house on St. Charles Avenue when one of the parades was rolling by. This is something that they had in their fridge. I'd never seen anything like it before.
It's a great breakfast drink.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. It kind of fortifies you, kind of solves the problem
like
the night before and kind of sets up the problems for the rest of the day. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I can have milk. I haven't had a drop of alcohol. You know, it's Mardi Gras. It's a good day for a relapse.
That's the thing. It looks...
Vitamin D stands for vitamin drunk, is what it is.
It looks very innocent sitting there, doesn't it?
You put it on your cornflakes.
All right. You know what? Give us a little bit more about the Sazerac, too, because that's the other drink you brought in, and that's a big, you know, New Orleans and Mardi Gras drink.
Yeah, Sazerac, classic New Orleans drink. I'm going to be making these. It's basically rye whiskey, bitters, and a dash of sugar, and the glass is rinsed with absinthe. Nice. Then you do a little lemon twist on the top. This is like my favorite drink to make and my favorite drink to drink.
Really?
It's just perfection.
I always equate things, anything made with absinthe, anything that you have to burn a spoon, if you look at like the old, it's just, I figured this would be more appealing. I feel like, you know, were you a fan of absinthe when you were hanging out?
I was a fan of anything.
Yeah, he was pounding vermouth.
I used to have waiters like come up to me, but... waiters would come up to me in the restaurant and say, would you like a cocktail? And I'd say, I'm awake.
Obviously.
Well, tell us a little bit more of the mist, though. I mean, that's the one.
Yeah,
of the
things so, to rinse a glass with absinthe, typically you would, you know, pour the absinthe in, and then pour it out. Now, absinthe is like, you know, $50 and up a bottle now.
Yeah.
And, you just can't waste it like that. So we have a misto here. Most people fill these things with olive oil. When you spray it, it sounds like this. And now the whole room smells like absinthe.
Like
I love that smell.
I'm getting a contact relapse.
So it's basically an alcohol vaporizer is what you're saying.
Yeah, and then if you're, you know, if your mouth feels less than fresh, you can...
There you go.
All right, folks. This is Eating Disorder. We're going to break. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back in a minute.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Everybody, welcome back to Eating Disorder. We're changing it up to Drinking Disorder right now.
There we go.
Asking Sinjin, hey, mister, throw me something.
Well, I mean, one of the things I want to talk about is, like, you know, I've been to New Orleans a bunch of times, and I've always been a fucking tourist, right? And, you know, what I am one of those guys that bought the hand grenades from the big idiot.
The three for one.
Yeah, the big hand grenade outfit. There was a guy on, you know, Bourbon.
A giant
hand grenade, and I'd buy that.
The big beer.
I'd throw up later.
Yeah.
And I'd buy the Hurricanes, and of course I'd throw up later.
Yeah.
You know, and then I'd be like, oh, I had a great freaking vacation. But, what's a hand grenade?
Well, first, on that thing, the new shit is the shark attack now.
That's
what they're doing down on Bourbon Street.
No, really?
Right? So they make a drink with a lot of blue Curacao.
Oh.
Then they fill a plastic shark with grenadine, and they say shark attack, and they dump the shark into the blue drink.
Ronnie and I lived on Bienville. We lived right on an exchange place, and that was kind of the smell of vomit.
Oh, yeah.
It was just it was because of drinks like that. It was
it's like such a weird dichotomy, because walking on Bourbon Street in the morning, you see the guys in front of Court of Two Sisters watering their ferns out there,
yeah,
and it's also
beautiful.
And the lace work of the iron, and it's like it stinks of vomit.
Bourbon
Street, like only Bourbon. I was looking for a metaphor, but like only Bourbon Street.
Yeah, there is no metaphor. Yeah.
Bourbon Street is pepper with vomit. Bell pepper with vomit. Actually.
What else? What are some of your favorite cocktails?
Oh, well, we were just talking about the Ramos Gin Fizz.
We
serve at Fort Defiance. Very popular brunch drink. Brunch drink.
It's a drunk drink.
It's working.
For sure.
It's working.
That's it's famously hard to make.
Really?
And yeah, and
what's the hard part?
It's got
to sacrifice your firstborn child. That's the first step.
It's got an egg white in it.
Oh,
So in order to, get that white incorporated in the drink, you have to shake it like hell for a really long time. Okay. Now,
you guys don't use
egg white
powder. They
used to do the slaves.
No, we don't. Yeah, well, it's not funny you say that. There used to be at the Roosevelt Bar or at the Roosevelt Hotel. They were famous for having 20 little black kids behind the bar, and they would. When the one was ordered, they would shake it, then hand it to the next one. They would shake the drink for 5 or 10 minutes. Just hand it down the line.
Were they all in little jockey outfits?
That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's really weird. Now, bartenders now have figured out workarounds
they
to
had
get the
to,
same effect
labor
without
costs.
Yeah.
Could you imagine without if you were a restaurant tour, the labor costs
they
would kill you.
They put it, they go to, they go to like Home Depot and put it in the paint
in
shaker.
The paint shaker.
I've had them that way. The last time I was in New Orleans, I was at the house. I was at this guy's house. He's a writer down there, and he literally had a paint can shaker.
Wow.
Nice. He would fill it up with Ramos's and turn it on.
Yeah. All right.
My thing was always bourbon. It was just, you know, straight bourbon. You know, like sometimes if I felt like drinking like a gentleman, I'd use a glass. You know,
we have Orla. She actually helps us produce the show. She's in the other room over here, and she's pointing at the cup of this milky deliciousness. And she's just miming. This is delicious. This is delicious. There we go.
She's coming in for some
finally
more.
Coaxed her in, ladies and gentlemen. Miss Orla,
all the way from Ireland. You never had a breakfast like that in Ireland.
It's clinically tested and
she's
mother
leaving
approved.
With the whole mason jar. I remember one year.
Available at Fort Defiance right now.
One year I decided to give up alcohol for Lent. My friend and I decided to give up alcohol for Lent. And that day, Ash Wednesday, we went to see Leaving Las Vegas.
And then they could have put Paul behind the bar with the shakes, you know, so that
strangely enough, that
he had carpal tunnel.
That would normally turn somebody off completely and say, I'm never touching alcohol again. But we had to have a drink immediately as soon as we left. Yeah, that's a sure sign of alcoholism right there. Man. But to stick with what we promised we would do, we went to the bar and we ordered bourbon on the rocks with O'Doul's backs.
It's kind of like not drinking.
That would put fuzz on your peaches.
All right. The last drink I want to talk about is it's not necessarily a New Orleans drink, but it's a Pimm's Cup, you know, and it's something. It is a New Orleans drink to some level, but it's like something that we always see the Pimm's and Campari. Those are the things in the back of my mother's, you know, cabinet that like are just dusty.
I never liked Campari. It's always an old
but I mean drink. What is okay, so what's the deal with a Pimm's Cup?
Yeah, Pimm's is a bottled cocktail. It's like something that's already mixed and you can pour it out of the bottle, you can drink it like that, but most people add like a lemon lime soda, or they might add lemon juice, or they might add
or 7 Sprite.
Up or
slice
Sprite
of cucumber or something.
In the UK they add bitter lemon soda to it. It's strongly associated with Wimbledon and with and with the Napoleon House.
See, all these names, yeah. Wimbledon, Pimm's, I feel like we should all be wearing monocles right now. Look at the Pimm's Cup, please.
Dude, it's the Mardi Gras show. We should have like jester hats on and like sitting here, you know.
Yeah, right. We always wore jester hats.
We're wearing beads, but not on the outside.
Well, I mean, okay, cool. Listen.
So, but the Napoleon House, beautiful place in the middle of the quarter. Amazing history behind this place. Beautiful place. One of those things that shows up in every tourist book.
Yeah.
But like a lot of things in New Orleans, a lot of the things that tourists do are also great. Like the French Quarter, when I moved there, I liked it. And then I said, oh, no, it's very, you know, that's only where like the tourists go. Yeah. And then like the Shim Sham opened and stuff. And it was like, and then I was like, what am I hating on the French Quarter for? It's awesome there.
Well, okay, I loved it. I just found that the beauty of it, like, you know, once we really adapted to New Orleans and we were full-fledged locals, it was like taking a step backwards into the shadows. And the streets would be full of the tourists, and we could see them, but they couldn't see us.
Right.
It was
like
Vampire not Vampire Diaries, Interview with the Vampire, right?
Yeah, it was exactly like that.
Well, okay,
one of the
things about every time you look into a New Orleans tourism book now, especially from all the marketing that's been happening since post-Katrina, they always go like, oh, but Mardi Gras is kid-friendly. They actually say this. You go on
I hope not.
Your kid breastfeeds, right? He's in a nipple. Yeah, it's kid friendly. It's great. Bring the whole family down.
But if it's kid friendly, they're not doing it right.
No, dude. But that's the thing. You know, you'll see it on all the marketing sites, all the local sites. I'm like, but despite popular opinion, that's
you
what they
can't
always start
even
with.
Move.
No, there is a way to do it with families. Ronnie, you know, it's like
I guess some of the night parades during the week, whatever. But I don't know about Fat Tuesday.
No,
like
there's
going
there's
to
a lot
Zulu.
You can't do.
Well, I raised my daughter down there. You know, there definitely are certain things you can do along St. Charles, and you can get set up with the ladder, and you put them on your shoulders and things like that.
A
you see the. Yeah, they have these special ladders set up, so you put the kids up on top of the ladder. And
it's
then
a high chair for your shoulders.
Right? Yeah.
It is. It's like an 8-foot ladder with what looks like an old wooden toolbox on the
top.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Yeah.
Teaching kids how to become carpenters.
It seems weird now that I'm talking about it.
It does seem weird, but everybody is
If that happened in New York, that would be the biggest lawsuit. Holy shit.
Everybody is so shoulder to shoulder that the thing doesn't fall over.
Right, they're literally stacked one against the other. You just expect them to go down like dominoes at any second.
Right. We're all the kids. But yeah, of course, you know, there are certain aspects of it that are kid-friendly. But, you know, really, I mean, it's an adult thing. You know, I mean, all the, you know, beads and boobs, man. You know,
beads and boobs.
Like you were saying, unless you're breastfeeding.
Exactly. You know, which we all are in some sense.
What was one of your favorites? Anybody, before we go, do you have anything to... really knocks your socks off?
Well, definitely, like, you know, Mardi Gras morning, Zulu.
Did you wake up in a bathtub full of ice and bacon, naked with your socks on?
Yes.
And a scar over your kidney?
Yeah. Yes.
And a note on the bathroom mirror that said, sorry, BRB.
Yeah, Zulu was always great.
Yeah.
Waking up for Zulu was always great. The crash worship shows were always fantastic.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I was dating a girl once who was on my shoulders for all of Zulu, we must have gotten a dozen coconuts. I said, did you ever put your shirt on during the whole thing?
Yeah.
Listening to Harry Nielsen.
The coconuts are just like the balloons and the beads are something that you can no longer throw. It happened in 1972. You can no longer throw a coconut, but they're very cherished from what I understand. Like getting a coconut is a big deal.
I tried to look up the whole bead thing. You know, prior to the show, I tried to do a little research on our topics and stuff like that. And I was looking up. I was like, the beads have to have some religious value, some type of antiquity within the entire, you know, festivities of Carnival and Mardi Gras. No. If you look up beads, it's like beads were given to girls who showed their titties. And that's it.
Yeah, well, that's a thing. It's like shiny objects.
Yeah, exactly. It was trinkets, shiny objects. But I thought, for some reason, because, you know, it has a religious background. You know, Mardi Gras was, I believe it was originally intended to kind of mock the rich and mock, and it was a way of getting all your sins out before you had to repent and you had to fast and whatnot. Yeah. So the entire thing, it culminates up to that.
There's something around the colors. You know, and the colors are
purple, shiny, green, I like gold. Shiny things and round things.
Yeah. You know, but at the same time, when it comes down to, like, the balloons, again, comes back to the fact that there was piracy around New Orleans. And that, and if you guys don't know this, it's the reason we actually have paper money is because they created promissory notes because they stopped wanting to get their fucking gold ripped off.
I think it was because gold is really heavy.
And that was the Spanish who actually found the New Orleans before the French, right? And that was the thing. It was heavy, so they created promissory notes to be able to track those because you can always print more of those rather than bringing in bringing in gold. But, you know, in regards to, like, the what do you get for what do you got, you know, with the
what do you got, what do you get, what do you hear, what do you say,
are we still talking about tits? Are we still talking about tits? I feel like we're getting distracted with a fucking lesson over here.
Where are the tits Show me the nipples.
Tits and alcohol, that's what it comes down to, Spiro. That's what it's all about. Too bad they don't take it over here in New York a little more. You know, we have fucking SantaCon.
We have all these
now they have
leprechaun.
They have leprechaun.
Orla, you have anything to say about that? Leprechaun.
Yeah, I think this Mardi Gras thing is a joke. Bring on Paddy's Day.
Oh.
There's too many sober people in the studio.
All right, you know what? We got about a minute left, and I think we're going to end with another song by Ronnie Magri. We got that queued up, guys?
We do.
All right, please bring it up.
Happy Mardi Gras, everybody.
Happy Mardi Gras. This has been Eating Disorder. Check us at Fork U Radio.
Go to Fort Defiance. Check out Ronnie Magri.
And drink some beer and see some titties, please. Titties and beer.
Throw me something, Mister.
Or a titty full of beer. The best thing for you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.